In the face of adversity, let's gather strength like the rich aroma of a freshly brewed coffee. Mekwa Coffee and Reason is not just a podcast. It's a sanctuary for shared stories, a refuge for inspiration, and a space where adversity becomes grounds for growth. Through the warmth of conversations and the richness of diverse perspectives, we extract the essence of life's challenges and distill them into the empowering elixir of resilience. We are rooted in the belief that every struggle carries with it the potential for transformation. So, join us at the table, brew your resilience, and let's reason together through the bitter and the sweet moments of life. Welcome to episode 5 of this adversity series of the podcast. I'm your host, Nurse Douglas Atkinson. And as we embark on this caffeinated journey of dialogue and discovery, let's center ourselves with our podcast mantra. We are brewing resilience and sipping strength, one cup at a time. Today, our guest is a 23-year-old woman who navigated the plains of migration and can definitely testify that no one lies like yard. She migrated 4 years ago, and since then, she has been rerouted, redirected, and rejected. She had to learn how to think on her feet, adapt to situations as they come, and stand firm in the face of adversity. Though she is dedicated to helping others through their hardship, she still struggles to deal with her own. We have with us today the life of the party, the prayer warrior in the group, and the lifelong friend to many, Mrs. Vanessa Cunningham Daly. Mrs. Daly will be sharing with us today her story of discovery and redirection after migrating to the USA. Mrs. Daly, thank you so much for joining us today, and it is absolutely a pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Pick up yourself, girl. So you're here to share with us that it is not always greener on the other side. We have to water it, what we do. But given that many persons saw USA, still sees the USA as the land of opportunities, and you're here to, you know, kind of shed light on another version of the USA, how are you doing now over there? Is it a case where you have proven that it is also the land of opportunities, but so many other things has happened?
Right. I think it's definitely the land of opportunity. But also, it comes with a lot of struggles. When I say a lot, I mean a lot of struggles.
Struggles, right? Given you mentioned struggles, however, I also want to take us back to where you had completed the BRA scale for us. That's the brief resilience scale, I should say. And it shows that you have a low resilience at this point in time. So for those who may not be familiar with it, the BRA scores range from strongly agree, neutral, disagree, strongly disagree. Mrs. Daly voted for many of them neutral. And though it was neutral, the score that you got, it shows that you have a very low resilience. Is it that over a period of time this happened, or were you always at this point when you first move overseas?
It's definitely over a period of time. Because when I migrated, a few years before now, I could endure you push me down, I get right back up. But I think over the past years, because I've pretended so well to be okay, to not have any help, to be afraid to ask for help, I think of putting on a mask that shows that I'm happy, but in deep within, I'm not. I think over a period of time that it takes
a toll on me. Yes. Definitely understand.
Right.
My question to you, you mentioned that you had to put on a mask. Was it a necessity because of moving overseas, or was it something that you always had?
It's something that I've always had, to be honest. I think that people are so much more comfortable. People are so comfortable to come to me and talk to me about stuff. I can pick up when somebody's feeling down because, mind you, even if they're pretending, I know what it's like to pretend. So mm-hmm. I know that. So when I see them pretending, I know that, hey, something is wrong. And then people always, you know, come and talk to me. But for some reason, I feel like I can't.
Accept that.
I don't know how to accept it. And because I'm afraid to say pity. You grew up in a childhood where you believe that, well, if you ask for help, a pity I look. If you talk about certain stuff, a pity I look. So over the years, I just put on a mask and be the happy person.
It helps you to get through a lot of it, that I understand. So given that you had to wear this mask for the past 4 years of living overseas, take us on the journey of when you first migrated, the difficulties that you had to encounter and you navigating through it.
I migrated from Jamaica 4 years ago, and you know, you hear about the land of opportunity, you know, you automatically create a time frame in your mind. Hey, I want to get this done. I have goals. I still have goals. I just don't put time frames on them because that's so depressing. The time COVID was at its peak in Jamaica, well, not at its peak, but you know, places were being shut down. I applied for everywhere. I live in the rural areas, so I'd have to migrate to urban areas. Nobody was accepting anybody in their homes. So, you know, it was hard to get a job. And I like to have money in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward, I came here. Now, I grew up in a household of siblings and their friends and my friends. And, you know, I mean, I grew up lonely. I mean, I grew up as a lonely child, an only child. So I moved here. And for the first couple of months, let's say 2 months, you know, the happy, tingly feeling kind of wear off. The butterfly, we say, whoa, me American, you know. Me, I start with the accent and stuff work, you know, me, I'm married. So after like 2 months, that kind of faded because where I was living and who I was living with, it was just both of us. And she worked basically all day. At the time, I wasn't working. So, you know, the depression started to jump in because now I'm lonely. You know, I don't have anybody. I don't know where I am. It's a new place. I don't know how to get around. So just like, well, I don't know if it left from me, I'd go back kill it. I don't know anywhere. You know, the system is completely different from Jamaica. So depression started to take a toll there. I got a job. And in those years, I was undocumented. When you're undocumented in the US, there's little to nothing you can basically do. You have to, like, even if you live Jamaica with 15 subjects, you have to come here if you're undocumented and start from the bottom. You know,
my subject didn't know nothing over there, so when my work so hard, forget
that dime, girl. You know, you had to start from the bottom. Started to work, you know, started to kind, you know, with the depression, and I got panic attacks over a period of time because I was so lonely. I didn't have anybody. I didn't have any friends. My family members weren't there. I just had to communicate with them over phone. After 6 months, after Mrs. Seke, you know, so you cannot stay over 6 months on your visa. When I realized that the 6 month mark had passed, I'm like, oh my God, it, you know, reality hit me. But then and there, I had a cousin. I have cousins here, but this specific cousin, she had friends and she realized that, hey, she's lonely. She started to take me here and there, started to hang out with me. And, you know, the depression kind of fade. And after that, you know, I was trying to say that the devil, if the devil is to say, yeah, find a way if he cut through, kind of. Hey, if he say, yeah, make a way out, he's going to come at you 10 times harder. So he saw that I was, you know, fading. The depression was because, no, I was not isolated. No, the person that convinced me to move here, things started to get rough on that end. Things started to get rough. Things started to go downhill. But, you know, I wasn't arguing. I was sucking salt through wooden spoon, as my granny would have said. And I fast forward and, you know, she met somebody and they were moving out. She told me that, you know, you're going to have to find somewhere to go. Because, you know, basically what she was saying is that she doesn't want any hindrance. She wants this to work with the person. But at the time, the job that I was doing, I wasn't making enough money to pay rent, to pay bills, to get grocery, and to just survive, you know? But I guess the guy said, you know, hey, your niece is not making enough money. Let her come. So I went to a different city, was there for a period of time. Problem start. I was put out from my, so this is now the second place I'm living in. So I lived in first city, then I moved to a second city. Now I'm going to another city, to my father's sister's home.
All right. So let's just take a brief moment here to take in all that you had said.
Right.
So you moved to the US because of the lack of feeling, well, that lack of fulfillment that you wanted as an independent teenager. Because before going to the US, you were what, 19?
I was 20. I migrated a week after I turned 20.
Okay, great. So an adult. Not working, you know, you see an opportunity, you grab it. So the individual that told you to come over there, she's the one that's putting you out now.
Yes.
You also mentioned that you were experiencing depression and panic attacks during that time and the loneliness that had set in. So what I do want to ask, what were you thinking about when you had the panic attacks?
One of my biggest triggers is failure. And not failure as in I try something and I fail and I can't do it again. As in, I'm now in a new country. I came here with a goal. I cannot fail. And just the heavy thought of that set me and have me trembling because I cannot go back to Jamaica. I can't, if I go back, I'm not come back a friend. You know? So those are things that triggered my panic attack and feeling like, you know, I'm not home. That alone triggers me. You know, stuff like that. So those are stuff that caused my panic attack. And then I was so lonely. I missed my friends.
So my question to you, did the panic attacks ever stop?
They stopped after a period of time. After I started coping, as in I stopped being isolated because, you know, that was one of the main triggers in the first place. I was isolated. I was somewhere that I knew nothing about. I didn't know where I was. I didn't have anybody to show me around. And that's not what I'm used to, mm-hmm. You know? So it's an unfamiliar, it's a foreign position. After I started, you know, going here and there, started communicating, having, you know, sleepovers with these ladies, convert, you know, I had people I could physically see and touch.
They are full American, you know, not Jamaican, not left in Ayo. Was it a case where something filled the gap where the failure was concerned? Because I understand where the loneliness, it kind of faded because you were no around persons that you can relate with. But the failure, the concept of failure isn't something that is easily gotten rid of or getting rid of. How did you get past the feeling, the thought, the very idea that you may fail?
So now I was working.
Okay.
So I left Jamaica because I couldn't get a job and I needed money. I wanted to be able to work.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was working. I had money coming in. I could get my little stuff done. You know, I could get home. You know, I felt, yeah.
Complete.
Yes.
So let's take us back to where you're now at your second home and your aunt is saying, hey, I can't stay anymore, not go work.
Now at my second home, as after I was put out at the first home, I'm now at my second home and, you know, it's a small space and I'm invading people's privacy. I'm invading people's home, and I get that. Let me be brief with what I'm trying to say so you can understand, because I don't want people to feel like, so everywhere we go, people put me on a problem. I don't really.
Yeah, set so up that disclaimer there.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a problem, people.
Mm-hmm.
That I was staying in at my second home now, the kitchen was right beside it. So there's not, how's these apartments in the U.S. set up? They don't really have a lot of windows. Not certain places, certain cities don't, they're not built that way. You know, the room that I was staying in, it didn't have a window. So whenever they cooked, the smoke and the aroma from all of the seasonings and stuff like that would, you know, come in that room. And then to how much smoke is in there, you can see it with your eyes. So it's now burning your eyes. So most of the times when they're cooking, I'd leave. So they had this little fan and I was using it whenever they were cooking to just breeze out the room, make the, you know, ventilate. If that's the word I think I'm looking for. Right? And one day I went to the laundromat and I came back and I realized that the fan was gone. So I my aunt came to me and said, well, sweet girl, to make peace reign, you can't use the fan anymore because her husband has an issue with it. He doesn't like the fact that the fan is on. There's no specific reason. It's not like it's burning current, nothing. He just doesn't like the fact that the fan is on in the house. So I said, okay, no problem. Moved forward, got a live-in job. So I'm moving from my second home now to my third. Got a live-in job, was there. Started my job there. My role was to take care of a child and do light housekeeping. However, you know, I needed somebody to be, I needed a listening ear. I needed somebody to care. And they somewhat presented that to me. So I opened up, which was the wrong thing to do. I should not have done that. And when I did that, you know, after 2 months, they said, hey, because at my aunt's place where my stuff were, all of my, you know, my stuff was taking up the place. It was a small place. Space and all of my stuff was taking up the space. So they said, hey, we have a garage, we have an attic, you can bring your stuff here. I did that. So after they found out my situation, they have 4 kids. The one kid stopped becoming my responsibility and I had 4 kids to take care of. I had an entire house to clean. I was picking up stuff that I was not supposed to pick up off the floor. I was just doing a lot more than a description. In this period of time, because I saw that how they were moving, I moved to my 5th place to catch. I was still working, but on weekends when I would stay there, because they're Jewish, so, you know, on weekends they don't do a lot of stuff. And I don't, it's weird to be in people's house and they have guests that you come out. It's just weird, you know? So I moved now to my 5th place. So this place now, in the first place, I had no reason going there because the situation, how this situation happened so I could end up there, it was wrong in the first place. But I think I was desperate too. I was desperate and I saw where somebody was kind, somebody was caring, somebody was looking out to me and I'm like, whoa, God, are you this?
Are you a show medical lawyer?
Oh God, whoa, God. So I ended up at my 5th place. My 5th place didn't last very long and by the time I was now at my 6th place, I was fired from my job because I met in a very serious car accident and I was doing physical therapy. And, you know, I understand now. Then I didn't understand. But now I understand that, hey, I need somebody to take care of my child or my children because I work. If you're not available, I have to get somebody else.
It would have been ideal for them.
Yes. So, you know, they let me go and I was not my 6th place. At my 6th place, I wasn't working. It was hard to get a job. I could not get a job for the life of anything. I'd look everywhere, high and low. I even looked janitorial works. At this point, I don't have a pride. I don't care. I just needed something. You have to work to function in this country. So again, land of opportunity, but bills will kill you. If you're not work, it better you go in your yard because, and like Jamaica, where you can go in your backyard, go pick a banana, chop a cane. You don't have...
I'm going to set up a little wood fire that I don't want to put on the pot when the gas done.
Yeah, so it work over, yes. So, you know, I'm now at my 6th place and looking job, you know, depression started to hit, you know, taking. Though, what saved me is that I'm a girl who loves to save. So I always was in a little partner here and there. So the partner money that helped me when me the partner money helped me when I work. sixth place now, argument arise with the person I was living with and the owner, and they said, hey, you have to leave. So at this point now, you know, the person I was living with, my boyfriend at the time, he was driving truck. So we had to sleep in the truck. We slept in cars, you know, here and there. So yeah,
there was no physical building for you to go into. But what I want to know was depression a consistent thing for you? Was it something that you consistently felt, or was it at certain points in time when, you know, felt extra low and the thoughts come flooding in, you know, you begin to feel overwhelmed and then everything just come crashing in? Was it something that was consistent or happens over, you know, very specific period of time?
So when I moved from the first home, meaning this is the home, the person who convinced me to come here, I was so depressed that I started to think suicidal again. The last time I think about anything suicidal was 2016. I'm not going to say the last time. I had thoughts, but nothing as much as how it was when I got put out the first time. And not having a job, depression was still there. So it's like everything I crushed down in my head. You're not work. You're not living away, right? You don't have a man. And you need a man to get through another country. A man or a woman. Yeah, you need some help to get through. So I didn't have any of that. So depression was there. I didn't have any money to do certain stuff. I had to depend on people.
Did you still feel this type of way even when you were working or when you were going out with your friends?
No. When I was working, well, let me not say a blunt no. There were times when certain things would cross my mind, but not as much as when I had nothing to do, when I have nobody around. So I'd say that people and work were my distraction. Once I wasn't doing those, it's like my mind is in constant havoc. I have too much time to think.
So moving helps you to cope?
Yes.
Okay.
Moving, working, all of that helped me to cope. Fast forward now, and, you know, I'm depressed. So working, still depressed here and there, but it was not bad. It was not to the extent where I know my extent. I know how far I've gotten in depression. It wasn't that bad. I just, here and there, stress about something like, God, you know, I need somebody to come help me. At this time, I was saving to do a business marriage. And a business marriage at the time was $10,000. So I was working and saving. And every time I realized that, oh my God, when are we going to reach $10,000? When? You know, things like that would help me to put me in a little depressive mode, but nothing for too long. As I was working and the money was coming in, where there's a will, there's a way. So, you know, I'm working and I'm, you know, doing stuff, getting stuff done, saving. So I'm seeing that, hey, my money, I go, yes, so I can do this, I can do that. After, yes, so I'm now at the sixth home and the thing happened and with my boyfriend at the time. And I, you know, went back and forth. Friend of mine was in a complete different state. No, I was on the East Coast and this place was on the West Coast. So when I say far away, I mean far away. She said, hey, you can come here and get a job. You know, job day after you get. I said, okay. And I left and I came all the way out here. Now I came all the way out here with all of the put out when we get all of the backbiting, all of the betrayal, all of the mouth talking that I've gotten. Now I'm at a place where this person is accepting me to be myself and I couldn't allow myself to allow her to be nice to me, because in the end, all I've experienced was they pretend to be nice at first and then they put me out. And at this point, I was trying to stay above my game. So in my head, I was just trying to get a job, save some money, get an apartment, because you not put me up before me left.
So what do you mean by when you said you couldn't allow her to?
This is now my seventh home. Imagine being in seven homes and they end similar. They start out nice, or they use you to clean the place because, you know, they take advantage of you. They see that you're willing to do it. And misunderstanding happen or something happens or, you know, time come and they tell you about it. Oh, girl, I used to sleep in my city. Girl, this. Mm-hmm. You know, you are so afraid to trust. You're so annoyed. You're so paranoid. You're so naive you don't know who to trust. So if somebody, because everybody you've met, they were nice at first.
So everyone like showed the same face.
Yes. So now this person was actually a nice person, was actually trying to be nice to me. But I just, for the life of me, I pretended to be okay with it and just roll with it. But like me, I watch you with five eyes. Like me, I watch you everywhere. I'm being very cautious. I don't make a pin drop. I don't make the music play loud from my phone. I don't talk in the house. I don't wear my slipper. Listen, I did everything right. Because guess what? You're not going to have an issue with me.
Not this time around.
I'm around because if you put me out to I made this so far from when we used to day, I don't have a soul here. I don't, when I say a soul, I mean not a soul. So, you know, I got a job and now it's a living job. So now I'm at my eighth place. At my eighth place, I started to work and now I'm saving. And my boyfriend at the time, we had plans to get an apartment, get our stuff from, you know, that side of the world to this side. And we worked on it and we was getting there. So now during this period of time where I was working on savings, I actually, you know, started to move and get closer to God because, hey, you know, I see where he's showing up. I see where, you know, I have time now on my hands to say, well, what if I had given up? What if I had stopped all of those times despite all of the things that were happening that I've been going through? What else? What if I had given up? So now, you know, things are working on the brighter side for me. And he was my boyfriend at the time. He's now my husband. He, you know, he came here and we got an apartment together. And when I say that, I cried in this apartment because look how girls struggle.
Took you this far.
Took me this far. Can you imagine? Girl thinks she'd come to America. And in a 6 months, girl would have married and get her papers and join the army. Come on, girl.
Look what Jesus had planned for you. I have a question. Earlier you mentioned that you contemplated suicide when you were put out at first. Was it a case where you've always been suicidal or was it a one-time thing? It wasn't a one-time thing because you also mentioned that this was a second time that you thought of suicide. So I guess my question would be, is it something that is consistent for you or just certain situations that make you contemplate that, hey, the life is not worth living anymore?
Yes to your answer. I know it's not a yes answer, a yes question, but yes. Suicidal thoughts is like this for me. Whenever things get dark, that's the time when the enemy, I say the devil, uses every failure, every bad thing that has happened in my life. If he's not showing me how far I've came, you know, he's showing me how far I could have been if and not there. And it's like every time something is supposed to happen, it happens worse than the first time. So now it's like my coping mechanism is it's too high now for me to cope. It's like, is this life worth living? Should I continue this? I've been having suicidal thoughts since I was probably 8 years old, but I didn't know anything about it. You know, I grew up in a very, you know, we have older parents and they really didn't know much about affection. You know, I had those thoughts, but I've never really acted on it because I was like, whoa, you know, all them till I say a devil in your brain, a demon's in you. You don't know them somewhere. When I was 16, I actually attempted it because the first wave is nothing like I've ever experienced. The first time I attempted it, there's nothing that could tell me that this is a life I want to live. Nothing. And it's not like nothing specific happened. It's just that over the years, I have battled so many things.
And it just kept building.
Continue growing. And when I say, I just came home, I was doing my SBA one evening and I started to cry. I'm ready to go. That's it. Every single thing, things that I even didn't remember. Because when you have trauma, you don't remember a lot of stuff that happened to you. Things that I remember started to be so vivid. I saw everything that happened to me since they started to happen, since I was 6 years old, until that day. And when I say I cry, and I take every pill I could have found in my house, I took everything. And there's nothing that could tell me that I didn't want to die. But God had other plans. Listen to me, man.
But you came a long way from 16 to, what was that, 21?
Yes. Like
2 years old. Did you get therapy the first time around?
It was minor therapy because at the time I was a minor, so they had a psychiatrist, but I didn't follow through much with it because it was all the way in St. Catherine, and I lived in, so it was hard to commute. It was hard to go back and forth. I only did like 2 sessions, but everything else I had to educate myself about. I had to read about, and my sister would educate herself to educate me and help.
What I also want to know, you went back to a place just now that was really triggering for you. I can just imagine that. But thinking about the second time that you thought about attempting it, did you get to the point where you were about to follow through and then someone stopped you, or was it something else that, you know, prompted you to say that, hey, I may have something more to live for?
The second time when I thought about it, I didn't act on it. It was just a very strong urge, but I didn't act on it because at that time, my biggest motivations were my mom and my little brother. Now, I said it was because at this point in time in life where I'm at, I've been so traumatized where my mom and my brother doesn't hold any weight anymore to my existence. So it's like, if I do decide to do this, there's nothing, there's nobody, not my mom and not my brother, that I can think about to say, you know what, if I die, this is going to affect them, you know? I'm not there. I'm not at that. I don't have, well, I have something, someone right presently that's, you know, a motivation. But at the time, my mom and my brother were, and I just, you know, didn't follow through. So whenever the thoughts come up, there's this song by Massacre that's called Suicide Note. And a song by Jashi that's, it's called Born Fighter.
Mm-hmm.
I'd play those 2 songs back to back because for some reason, the pain in their voices,
they soothe you.
Yes.
Because they can relate to what you're going through.
Yes. At one, and I don't want to stray from the point, but, you know, when you were giving your introduction, you said the prior worry of the group, to how bad depression started to hit me, I stopped praying. I didn't listen to a gospel song. I didn't read a Bible verse. None of that. I was in a state where God was covering me. God was blessing me in a time that I wasn't even talking to him. Believe me. I didn't talk to God. I was upset with him. I didn't tell him, but he knew that I was upset. But no matter how much, like even when I do talk about it and argue with him, no matter how much I argue with him, it's like there's this thing inside of me where I cannot be ungrateful. It's like, and it's not even me trying. I'll get up and say, boy, God, me beg and make me not serve you no more. If this you want me, go baptize for me not do it. And then after, 2 seconds later, but I'm grateful that you brought me this far. Because if I never, you're more today, so. So no matter how much my God, it's like, as soon as I cuss him, there's this thing inside of me that cannot keep me away from telling him thanks.
Even as Christians at times, when we're going through difficulties, when it's so heavy, it's hard to pray, you know, so it helps when you have a family of worshipers that helps you through this time, because even the scripture says that when you're going through difficult times, call on others to pray for you, because God himself knows that we can't go always read every time. The word is not go always come, we're not go always want to read the Bible. We're not gonna always want prayer. We're not gonna always want to sing. Sometimes we're just going to feel so numb. And I can definitely understand and empathize with what you were going through. I know that this may not have been where we wanted to be at this point in time, but I do want you to speak on the last few months, if it's still applicable with the difficulties that you had went through.
All right. Before I begin, you know, you said something about sometimes we have to call on. That's what probably helped me. Not probably, that is what helped me. Sometimes I just call my sister, I call my mom, my brother, and said, hey, pray for me. And I'll stay on the phone and they pray. That's it. And I just, you know, they the word that I'm looking for, they reach out to God on my behalf. So they're standing in the gap for me. And that is what helped me.
They interceded.
Yes. Now, got my apartment. I'm not going to go too much in detail, but relationships have difficulties. So after I got the apartment, remember the part where I told you that if Satan say that you're standing up a certain depth away,
you push it down.
So no, the relationship was having issues. And for the life of me, I couldn't understand how we ended up so far and now this is such an issue. Why are these things popping up? Why are these things popping up? And I lost the job that I had before and still had one job going on and was finding a second. Worked and worked, prayed. Things started to get better. In this period of time, I never mixed with God. I just did feel so far away from him. I felt guilty that I was getting so close to him. And then all of a sudden, some trials and tribulations started. And I'm like, whoa, we're back here. So I felt guilty. But I know this very good pastor. And he always tell me like, hey, even if you feel guilty, he forgive you. Go on back to him. Go back. You know? And that is what, you know, sometimes we go back and something. In last year, I don't want to mix up the years, you know. No, it's 2024. Last year was 2023. In 2023, I attempted suicide twice. But not in a way that I wanted to die. I just wanted to just not be here for a minute. Because in truth and in fact, for me, I don't really want to die. I think for me, it's like more of a cry for help. And if it happens, it happens. But
this is what I'm going to ask for it because yeah. This is the only way that I know how to know.
That's the only way people know how to answer to me. Nobody hears me. Nobody sees that this is, I'm hurting. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. So, and I mean, if it happened where I died, it happened. But my main intention was never to, you know, it was just to say, oh my God, man, I'm tired. I need a break. Mm-hmm. Just give me a yes. Jesus.
Tired of fighting, tired of being strong, tired of having to put on this facade, tired of being chirpy, tired of seeing the brighter side of things.
Tired. Mm-hmm. Yes, correct. So I attempted it twice. And before the year ended last year, I was in a position where I'm like, I've been in the U.S. for, you know, every year when it came to the anniversary of when I migrated, I cried because I looked at how I did not achieve anything. Mind you, know, I achieved stuff, but it was not up to the caliber that I wanted. I would have wanted a Range Rover and a 5-story.
One nice red, what they care the name, what Terry have? RAV4, one nice RAV4, going down the road. Your dog on your side, your nice clothes, you can go out when you feel like your nice money on your side. Where even when I forgot work tomorrow, may have enough in my bank.
No, we're talking.
Yes.
That every time when it got to that specific time, it's like I cried. And I remember last year when it got to that time in October, I cried like a baby. I cried until I was like, God, me not see why me need to live because me not get nowhere. I'm not getting anywhere. And, you know, we have the plan. The plans are in place. But it's like, the plan did about the money, not did it?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I'm like, oh my God, I can't do this anymore. I think this would be worth more if I was buried. You know? Me, I think about how much now me could have saved up to make my mother get to bury me. For shit, my body got them. Them look like something, yeah, girl.
No, man, imagine she's thinking about death, but at the same time, she has said, more than me, I've been off in a bank to ship my body, my own body.
Yeah, bury me over here, so. I'm going to do too much, yes, man. So, mm-hmm. You know, that happened, and you know, at one period of time, one point in time, I went to the store. I was sitting in the car, and I sat, and I'm crying. And when I say that, leaving just I thought I cried much after the suicide wave. I thought I cried because, you know, the psychiatrist was telling me that, hey, I think you're emotionally constipated. I think you really don't know how to, you know, you cry, but you don't want nobody to see you cry because you feel like you're weak. It's not really a weak thing. It's more of like you need to release stuff and you're keeping up too much. That's why you ended up here in the first place. And girl, you think me ball me there, Jamaica? Me ball every second of firing. Firing see me here water. Me could have grew a forest with them. I cry. And are crying. And you know, I went to this store and I asked the representative, do you know where the ropes are? He said yes. And I went there and I picked up a nice yellow rope. Yellow color. And I said, don't serious with myself. I got a note and write to everybody that I love. My mom, my uncles that I call with, my cousins, my sister, my brothers, my fiance at the time. I write to everybody. And that was a period of time where I knew that I was going to act on it. I knew. And for some reason, my fiance, he was not supposed to leave work. He left work. He opened the car. He saw the rope. He asked me what it was. No, he's, how do I say it? So he knows how to, it's not like me. Me know what to say to somebody. He doesn't really know what to say.
Mm-hmm.
So he will probably not say much, but he will try to console you, get you food. He'll do acts of service to food. Get you to
food, yeah. Vanessa.
To get you out of that mind frame. And you know, he
imagine got, me wanting to kill myself and my husband got me food.
Can you imagine, girl? Food. Darling, the man give me food and I'm that ball. Probably hungry.
I'm going to be hungry. I think so. I'm tired of all of this.
Oh my God. And that was the last time I acted out on it. And yeah, I'm now in February 2024, and I must say, though the trials are still there, I'm at the part where even if I don't feel like talking to God, even if I don't feel like praying, I sit and say, hey, my heart is heavy. I'm in this position and I don't know how I got here. Help me. Show me some help me. You know, I'll say something to him, but in the midst of it, I'll tell him thanks. Man, I don't know. I can't tell God thanks. So I tell God thanks for all women and women. God, thank you. Right now, I'm telling you thanks.
So because, yeah, the most grateful woman, yeah. Thank God, land right now.
Oh, God. And now I'm here in 2024, and I must say that things aren't the way how I want them to be, but they're far from worst.
Mm-hmm.
Things aren't where I want them to be, but they are far from worst, and there's progress.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in things, I'm seeing growth in things. Can you imagine, girl? I'm a wife.
A whole wife. Blessed be the name of Jesus.
Amen.
Blessed be to God.
I've been, you know, I see him working out stuff. And for that, I know that I'm here. I'm not going to tell you that there aren't days that I cry. They aren't days that I feel like, it's not worth it. We just need to give up. But it's not to the extent of where in that middle part of these 4 years where the depression was so low, where no, though, I'm not the life of the party anymore. I've developed social anxiety. Instead of dealing with things head on, I ignore them until I have the strength to do so. And I'm not going to use ignore. I leave them alone until I have the strength to do so.
Mm-hmm.
My anxiety is through the roof. I overthink a lot. I have insomnia. I'm so paranoid where I can't trust nothing, nobody. That's how much damage they've passed. The land of opportunity, that's how much damage the land of opportunity has presented itself to be. I'm so isolated. Where I'm at, I don't have any friends. I can't even find a good church to go to. I don't have the strength to even get up. There are days where I just lay in bed for the entire day. Lay down. If I don't have to eat, I don't eat. And I go to the bathroom when I can. If I have to be a girl, I tell the truth, I not be it, but I have to. I live with a man. And it's, girl, may we tell you it's true. Like, there's days where I feel like I don't have the strength to do any of this. There are days I see things on social media. And it's nothing that's supposed to trigger me, but it triggers me.
There are days I really, my anxiety is so through the roof. Therapy, I'm going through therapy currently. Just started for myself as that. Just started and we've discovered some things, some safety plans, some things. And I'm trying to act on them. But the land of opportunity, sweetheart. You know, there are days I tell myself that if I was in Jamaica, I probably would have find hardship, but no like how me find here, so.
You have find two cane for pop, man.
Two cane and pop, girl, and eat.
And can't man, thank you, Lord. I can't even go up a road and make a grand feed there more.
Listen, one day, girl, I could get a job. You understand? Listen, I don't know, but I even look. I'm back to even look. Go see, I could go up a White House, go big Uncle Biden for good jet for count ballot. You crazy? So I'm there. No, that's why my, what is it called? My BRS?
Mm-hmm.
My
brief resilience score.
Yeah. One time I would answer everything agreed, over agree. No, I'm just at, I need to get, yeah, I'm not where I used to be, and I need to get from here because it's depressing enough. It's depressing to see how you were the life of the party. So we need to get from there. So, yeah.
I think that even though for most persons, maybe starting this, the listening to the first part of this podcast, I think to themselves, oh, she go through all of this, you know, but at the end she go, you know, up here, so she go rise above all the challenges and the podcast is going to end on a high. But I can appreciate how you have grown in chaos. And even though for many persons going through the chaos, they would have wanted to just stay right where they are.
Mm-hmm.
But you are at a place where you have acknowledged that, hey, I was here before. But no, this is where I am. This is where I am. And this is the reason why I am here. Not a lot of persons can pinpoint as to why they are at this low point in their life. Not a lot of persons can pinpoint that this is what affected me. This is why I am going through this right now. This was a traumatic event that caused this at this point in time. And this is what I am experiencing. Not a lot of persons can pinpoint that this is anxiety. This is paranoia. Mm-hmm. This is distrust. This is because of this that happened when I was 6 years old and not 5 days ago. Not a lot of persons know their core. And I can definitely appreciate that you have, over the past few years, though you bottled up a lot, you also experienced a lot. You also mm-hmm. discovered a lot. You also said to yourself that, you know, so this is not me anymore, and it don't make no sense me even try to go there. So I won't be able to sustain everything. This is where I am now, and this is how I'm going to deal with it one step at a time. I have so much appreciation for that, and I definitely want to tell you thank you for sharing all of that with us. Thank you for being so vulnerable. Thank you for being so open. I'm quite sure that a lot of persons may have questions as to what happened in between, as to what is going to happen now, but thank you so much. Just before we, you know, close off everything, I have three last questions for you. Let's say that you're talking to your just migrated self right now. What are some steps that you would give yourself in order to create the environment that you will need to survive, to thrive, and be that person that will overcome?
It might sound a certain type of way, but the only person you can depend on is God.
Mm-hmm.
Do not put your all. Don't think that you cannot, and don't think that somebody wouldn't do this to you. Also, do not put a time frame on anything you have to do. You set goals for yourself. But you see, what becomes depressing is when you say, okay, in 6 months, and nothing's wrong with that, but with realistic stuff, with stuff that, you know, it's not only you who's supposed to do it. You need the help of others to do so. As I said, you cannot depend on others. Do not say in 6 months, I want me as such person to get this done. Well, sometimes it can happen. Sometimes when that 6 months come and you see that you're nowhere close to getting what you need, what you want, you become depressed because, hey, I wanted this to be done in this period of time. I tell myself that it is okay to step outside of your comfort zone. As in, me grew up a country, so me shadowed by a lot of stuff. But it's not hard to step outside of your comfort zone. Like, do something that you think that, whoa, this risky. As in, not risky as in the end of life, but risky as me really take one Uber come over my mall, I'm in a last, you know?
Right. Yes.
Do things like, try to learn things on your own, because them say no man is an island, but in this country, sometimes you're going to have to be your island. And people in your country that you're from, they're going to have to be your community. Not people here, but people outside of your country who cannot be there for you physically, financially, you know, just by their being there emotionally. So step out of your comfort, learn stuff. Yeah, that's what I tell my younger self. My 20-year-old self.
And what encouraging words would you have for someone that may be going through a similar situation right now, an adolescent that may be going through a similar situation right now?
It gets better. It gets worse. It gets better. It gets worse. And I repeat those two things because, you know, oftentimes you hear people say, oh, it gets better. Of course it does. But also in the better, it gets worse. And you have to structure your mind. Have at least one person, at least one person that you can confide in. And I know it's not, a lot of people aren't blessed with the luxury that the blessing that I'm blessed with, to have a person, my person, who I can call and just cry. But try your best to have a person who can be the shoulder that you need. Boyfriend and girlfriend narrow now. I mean, no parents deal with that. But we have but boyfriend and girlfriend are in the way. And know your worth, because people will know your situation and use it against you. Don't be afraid to say that, oh, you know, I spend so much time with him, I can't leave now. Or I spend so much time with her, I can't leave now. Or him say mago. If him not do it, that's it. That's it. And I'm not saying that they won't, but in my experience, if they say mago do it and not do it, when they say mago do it, that's it. Try your best to protect yourself, as in from STDs, STIs, and pregnancy. The last thing you want is to be pregnant and moving from home to home, or not somewhere stable to stay. It gets better and it gets worse. Work. Don't be lazy. Don't be lazy. Work. That's what keep you surviving in this country. Work. Money, work. Prayer. Even if you don't feel like prayer, ask somebody to pray for you. Pray. Do not leave God out of anything that you're doing. Allow him to be the center, the head, the last, the big land, the side, everything you're doing. And though a lot of times we may not listen to him, though sometimes our disobedience might put us in some situations, still try your best to put him first.
Last question. How does it feel to not have been able to overcome that which you had gone through? How does it feel to still be on the road to recovery, still be on the road to overcoming, still be on the road to persevering? Because all that you have gone through, you have, as you have mentioned, it got worse and it got better, but it also got worse. And you are still at a place where I'm still trying to get back to where I was, and even better. How does it feel to be at this place right now and not at a place where you can say, I got over it. I overcame it. I am standing strong, but that's not you right now.
It is discouraging, but I don't want to contradict myself. It is discouraging, but also encouraging to see that there's better somewhere out there. I'm going to reach better yet. If I'm going to reach better, that means I'm going to reach where I'm going. It is discouraging in the sense that you know who you were, you know the person you were, and the fact that you're not that person anymore, it's discouraging. But also, there is some form of beauty in the pain that you go through, because every time I've overcome something, every time I've overcame an obstacle that presented itself, I look at it as these tests that I'm going through is going to be fuel for somebody. It's going to be a testimony for somebody. And if there's nothing else I'd want to do in this world, it is to. If there's nothing else I'd want to do in this world, it is to let. Because I know people are out there going through things like even worse than what I'm going through. Is to somebody to hear my story and say, whoa. The same time we reach up at pinnacle, the same time we drop on the army suit there. I'm gonna say, yo, that girl yeah, did go through that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's somebody else courage to say, whoa, probably I can. What if I can? What if I endure? What if? I'm going to tell you, it's not traumatizing for everything we go through, and it's really hard for you to get past those traumatic events. It's hard for them to leave your mind. It clouds your judgment. It makes you push people away. It makes you cannot form positive bonds. You're traumatized from the stuff that you have encountered and endured, but it gets better.
Jeremiah 29 verse 11 says, "For I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future." That is what you're holding on to right now. You're not where you wanted to be. But because of that very fact, you know that there is something better in store for you. And that is absolutely beautiful. That is so beautiful. And this story is truly inspiring because to have gone through all that 10 home in 4 years, me not think me could have done that.
Oh my God.
Me not think me could have done that. And we did not even touch base off most of the trials that you had endured.
Oh yes.
Imagine all the pain, imagine all the hurt, the anger. Imagine all those emotions, the discouragement, the failure, the hopelessness, the lack of faith, because you're saying to yourself, God, is this what you really brought me to?
Yeah.
That was inspiring. You showed us how easily resilience can fade, even in the strongest of us. No matter how strong you are, man, make the right situation ever just touch your back.
We can be six.
Yes, your side like on your side, cold water in a bathroom. You showed us that even though resilience fade at times, strength may fade or happiness may fade, even in the midst of that, we still can be grateful.
Yes.
We still can be grateful that. Thank you for the situation because I know it's going to teach me something great to deal with the next one that's coming because as you rightfully said, it gets better, but it also gets worse.
Yes.
Your story taught us that we have to be prepared for the next thing that is going to come, even if we're still happy. And it doesn't say that you're not supposed to be complacent in your happiness. It just says that you're supposed to be prepared. With every single thing that God has given you, the blessing, just know that you're going to fight to keep it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You have to be prepared for the fight. Yes, the blessing is going to come, but are you prepared to fight to keep that blessing? You have endured loneliness. You have endured depression, panic attacks, suicide. And you are standing strong in spite of not being where you were in the first place. You're standing strong in your weakness, and it's not because of your own strength, but God that has been yours.
Right.
The songwriter said, "You are my strength like no other." And no joking. And once again, just thank you so much for sharing such a.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you all for tuning in to another episode of Mecca Coffee and Reason. And if you like what you have heard thus far, please remember to like, share, subscribe to our podcast channels on all platforms. Leave a comment under each episode to let us know how this podcast episode impacted you. And feel free to send us a message on our Instagram page at Mecca Coffee and Reason or via an email at schoolnursedouglas@gmail.com. with the names and contacts of those who you'd like to see next Reasoning With Us. Or if you have a topic you'd like us to discuss in the Make Quick Reason series, let us know just the same. So as we say hello to our brand new week, let's remember our podcast mantra. We are all brewing resilience and sipping strength, one cup at a time. As the week goes on, allow the aroma of freshly brewed coffee to inspire authentic conversations, and may each episode leave you with a sense of connection, reflection, and a renewed appreciation for the simple joy of sharing thoughts over a cup of coffee. See you next Sunday on the Make With Coffee and Reason podcast.